If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Listening to this podcast? Smart move. Being financially savvy? Smart move. Another smart move? Having State Farm help you create a competitive price when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling. Just another way to save with a personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. Today we're going to do our end of season deep dive on season 2 of The Valley. But first, there's a lot of other stuff to talk about. Get ready for a loaded episode. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and I'm running on fumes. I just have to tell you, it has been quite the past 10 days. A little less than 2 weeks ago, I got back from family vacation, a really incredible vacation in Nantucket with my family. I feel very lucky to have been able to go and be there for so long and all together. The next day, I found out that my aunt passed away and her funeral was beautiful. It was last weekend. It was just a really great celebration of life. I went down to Memphis for 36 hours. It was, you know, obviously last minute and quick and just a little chaotic to get it all planned because my mom also had a surgery scheduled for that weekend. So my siblings, I'm one of four, so my siblings and I sort of divided and conquered. And I don't usually talk about personal stuff on here, but just to kind of tell you where I'm coming from today, it's been a lot. And, you know, it also just the whole experience of, like, you know, starting to process the grief, but also coming together as a family and figuring out a game plan to, like, do this. It just kind of hit home the gift of having family and feeling lucky about having one another and supporting one another through difficult times. So I just wanted to say that up top, because then I also came back to the city and I just kind of feel whiplash because I had this, like, really intense emotional situation. And then the past 3 nights I've had 3 awesome experiences. It's like really, really cool things that I'm about to tell you about. But it's just been like go, go, go after a really emotional thing. And so I'm just a little bit discombobulated. And I had to just, like, so if it feels a little off, that is why. But yeah, so this week has been really packed with, again, back-to-back opportunities that I'm so grateful for. And these are the kind of things I used to dream about doing when I was little and when I was at the beginning of my career. And I just kind of, some of these are pinch me things, honestly. It's just really, really, really great. And it's also crazy because all of this is leading up to my birthday on Saturday, which, classic Leo, dropping obvious hint that it's my birthday soon. But yeah, it's just overwhelming because I also get a little weird around my birthday sometimes. I mean, summer birthdays are weird in general because you kind of grow up used to, you know, your friends always being out of town. So birthdays are a little bit uneven and weird and kind of inconsistent. And I also just get very reflective and kind of emotional and, like, just introspective, I would say, around my birthday. Again, overwhelming, but mostly in good ways, other than obviously one pretty heartbreaking way that we're dealing with as a family. But I do enjoy sharing all these cool experiences with you guys, and I hope you appreciate me talking about them. So the first one, which actually was last Friday, I did go to Lindsay Hubbard from Summer House's housewarming party last Friday. She lives in a new apartment, which she has documented that whole move on her Instagram, and she posted about her housewarming on her Instagram story. And her apartment's beautiful. It's really big. I'd been to the old one, and it's a total upgrade. It's really amazing. And I'm really, really happy for her and Gemma to have this amazing space to live in together. And I can't really say much about the actual party, obviously, but I did sign a release, and there were cameras there. So I can't really say much about what I observed, but I had some really nice conversations, which I think were off camera, with some of the cast who I've known for, it's just crazy. I've known these people for 10 years now. It's really wild. But yeah, it's honestly so fun to just observe how the sausage is made and how it all works. And just, I could watch that all day. And I actually couldn't even stay for very long. I think I was there for about an hour, because I had to catch a flight to Memphis. So I know I missed a couple of bigger moments at that party, but it was a nice little soiree. And again, it's a big apartment, but it's still an apartment. So you really see everything going down, and it's not like something, I didn't see anything crazy, but it's just, it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch the production side of it. It really is. So that was that. And I'll say more about that when it airs. And I'm sorry to be a little bit teasy and cryptic and annoying, but I'm not allowed to say anything else. So then 3 days later, after I went to Memphis, I came back, and the next morning I hopped on a bus at 8:30 in the morning with my friends from Threads. And if you don't follow me on Threads, go follow me, because I actually post more there than Twitter these days, by the way. Same username, Gibsonoma. So I hopped on a bus with my friends from Threads and HBO Max to celebrate And Just Like That, which came to an end. It's coming to an end tonight, so this will come out probably as I'm watching the finale, honestly, tomorrow morning. I don't know how it ends, but we were there. We went a couple hours on the bus to Amagansett in the Hamptons, which is where I believe Sarah Jessica Parker's house is. And we went to Il Buco in Amagansett, and we had lunch as we watched Sarah Jessica Parker, who was literally 5 feet away from me, talking with Evan Ross Katz, friend of the pod. They did a really cool Q&A, a really good Q&A, and she had all these really long, thoughtful answers. I threw them up on my TikTok. Some of them, I think, are on my Gabbing with Gabe Instagram page. So, but she's very thoughtful. She's incredibly pure and earnest. And I don't always love earnest, but with her, I love it. It's just, there's something sort of untarnished about her. And she talked about, like, you know, she hates watching herself, even though she's an actress. She notoriously doesn't really like taking pictures with people, but she graciously took pictures with every single influencer there. There's a lot of other pop culture and fashion and travel influencers there. And I had a little moment with her where I talked about, and I redacted what I talked about with her, because my friend Abby Bonadies, friend of the pod, took a video of us interacting. And I put it up on Instagram, but I took the sound off, because you can kind of hear, kind of not. But basically, I told her, I was like, listen, like, when I was growing up, my mom watched Sex and the City every Sunday night. And we were not allowed to watch. And my family was allowed to watch most things earlier than most other kids. Like, we were watching PG-13 movies early. We were watching R-rated movies early. The TV was always on in our house. That's just kind of how we grew up. And so it's just funny, because Sex and the City was like the one thing that my mom was like, nope, this is for me. You guys can't watch. You're going upstairs to bed. And obviously that intrigues us, and that makes us want to watch it even more. So we would sometimes like sit on the stairway and like peek around the corner and watch and listen to it. So I was always so intrigued by Sex and the City. And I kind of had this sense, obviously, that I would like it from a young age. Obviously, it was years later that I watched it in full. And I love Sex and the City, the first movie. One of the best movies of all time, I have to say. But anyway, I kind of told her that in a shortened version of that, and just like kind of how much the show meant to my mom and later on to me. And then I realized, actually, after the fact, I kind of wish I had realized this before so I could have told her. I only had like, you know, 20 seconds with her. But it also coincided with my 10-year anniversary of living in New York, which means that I'm officially a New Yorker this month, which is when 10 years ago I got my first apartment lease. I haven't really reflected on that, because I really realized it the day after, which is just crazy. It's just like, I thought that, I think that's kind of kismet timing, because Sarah Jessica Parker, through Carrie Bradshaw, is such an iconic New Yorker, and she represents so much for like that era of being in New York, like kind of around the age of 30. And yeah, so that was kind of a cool thing that coincided with. it's funny because I talked about I posted some clips on TikTok. People feel really strongly about her in relation to And Just Like That, and like, you know, they blame her for like ruining the legacy of Salt Lake of Sex and the City, and you know, And Just Like That is just so bad, and they've changed everything. First of all, I don't agree with that. And second of all, I just didn't realize so many people felt so strongly about her in that way. Like, I was shocked. I thought she was like a universally beloved figure, but I fucking love her. And she was so nice and gracious and just a good sport about the whole ordeal. And after that, we then went to Amber Waves Farm, which is just down the road from Il Buco. And then we had a little activation with Ray-Ban Meta, which are like these amazing sunglasses. I don't really, you know, do the whole AI thing yet, mostly, but they have these Ray-Ban Meta sunglasses that are like, they look just like regular Ray-Bans. They're not clunky or chunky at all. And they have a little button on it. And you can like take pictures and videos and you can be like, hey Meta, like, what am I looking at? Or, hey Meta, like, blah, 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 blah. And it's kind of crazy. So we were basically at this Amber Wave Farm, which is a really cool female-owned farm in the Hamptons. And we kind of were walking around getting a tour. We did like a floral arrangement class. Like, this was a dream day, you guys. Like, it was just like, we were like, what is life? And my friend texted me after, she was like, that was like a Broad City episode of an influencer trip. Like, it was just like kind of Mad Libsy and kind of like, what is life kind of vibes. And it was a Monday and we were like, damn, like what a crazy Monday. But it was just a really fun day. And again, meeting SJP is like once in a lifetime, obviously. And the fact that it was the week that the Sex and the City universe is coming to an end for right now is just feels really special and cool. So I wanted to tell you about that and shout out to the Threads and HBO Max teams for putting that together. Really, really cool. All right. So the next night, the fun keeps on going. I had been invited to a DirecTV party that was like celebrating Bravo. It was called the Plot Twist Party. And in the invitation, it was just like, come to a party. Meredith Marks is going to DJ. She has a special collaboration with Lisa Barlow. And I was like, say less. I'm there. Two of the housewives I gravitate towards most, honestly. But then I got there and I get my ticket. And I'm like, this is a way bigger deal of a party than I realized. They told me to walk the blue carpet. So I was like, they had like a name card for me and everything. I was posing for all these Getty and AP photographers. I was like, what is going on? And then we go upstairs to like the 32nd floor to the Perch Rooftop, which is a very cool venue. Unfortunately, it's near Penn Station, which is like a gross area of the city, but it's honestly a gorgeous, gorgeous venue. And then I walk in and it's like, you know, I rode the elevator up with Gertie and Wendy, who I ran into in the elevator bank. And Lisa Barlow had been coming back down to do some press in the carpet. But it was, from what I could tell, the people there were Gertie, Alexia, Dr. Wendy, Brittany from Salt Lake City, Lisa and Meredith, Craig and Austin, Brooks and Chloe and Seth Marks, Ariana Bierman, Georgia, Shy, someone from McBee Dynasty. And I feel like maybe I'm missing a person or two, but that's who I remember being there. It was like a solid group of people, honestly. And I think I talked to most of them. I wish I really wanted to seek out Brittany, but I just didn't really get a chance to talk to her. And I wanted to get a picture with Wendy, but we were kind of there together at the very beginning of the party. But it was really fun. It was honestly relaxed. And obviously a bunch of my other sort of content creator, podcaster friends from in and around the Bravo world were there too, which was always really, really fun to all be together. Some of my friends at Bravo were there. It was just a great crowd, an amazing venue, good vibes. There was a performance from Lisa Barlow. She came in from the back of the room singing Yukon by Justin Bieber. You can't make this shit up. And then she made her way toward the front of the room through this big crowd where Meredith Marks was behind the DJ booth, and she was DJing and dancing behind her. She also sang No Broke Boys, the remix from Tinashe. She sang Espresso by Sabrina Carpenter. Like, it was just like, what? It was incredible, honestly. It was just, you again, can't make this shit up. It was so entertaining, so camp, and just like exactly why, like, I love being part of this Bravo, like, community and sphere. It's like these are these Mad Libs moments that I'm just like, I just love being a part of this. Like, it's just fun and supportive and random and just, you know, it's fun to be in the same room with some of these people, honestly. And I brought my best friend Ryan, and I wanted to introduce him to Lisa, who was one of his favorites. And when I went up to her, she was like, oh, I'm getting really hot. She had this like little handheld fan and she was a little tired. So she was like, let's go sit down. So we went over to this like banquet of booths and we just all chatted for a long time. Some other people were popping in and out of the conversation. We talked about family and Sundance and the party itself and New York restaurants and some about the new season, which sounds like it's going to be amazing. I'll talk about the trailer in a second. And then we were sitting there. And this song played that I had personally never heard in my life. Lisa knew most of the words to it. And she was like, oh my God, let's ask the DJ to play it again. And then we'll get mics and we'll do karaoke. So I was like, okay. So I go up and have them play it again. I get the mics and I pull up the lyrics on my phone. And we just start singing along to the song again that I had never heard in my life. And then obviously people start hearing her voice on the speakers. So people start crowding around. This is all totally impromptu, by the way. Like totally, like we were just like having a grand old time. Then Austin Kroll from Southern Charm comes over and he's like, let's do Gimme, Gimme, Gimme next by ABBA. So he sits down and we start doing Gimme, Gimme, Gimme. And that's when people, I mean, that's a great song choice, honestly. And it got the people going. So people were dancing, singing along as we were singing on the mics. And then we did Good as Gold by Sheena Shea. It was just like such a random, again, impromptu moment. You can't make this shit up. I was like, what is life? This is just a random Tuesday night doing karaoke with Lisa Barlow and Austin Kroll on a rooftop in New York City. Like, it was hilarious, honestly. And then I may or may not have ended up at drinks with a couple of Bravo celebrities at after hours at a different spot, which I can't talk about. But it was quite the night. And the new season of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City sounds lit. And I did get some whiffs of Next Gen NYC season 2 sounding very likely. That's all I can really say. I can't say how, but it's seeming promising. And I also got confirmation that the cast has not spoken to Charlie in months. So that was an interesting little detail. So that was the DirecTV party. And then the next night, the next afternoon, I go up to the Four Seasons Hotel in Midtown for Heather Dubrow's annual media mixer. So usually Bravo celebrities will have like a press day where they'll bop around. Maybe they'll do some virtual interviews from Bravo HQ. And they just like kind of hit all the spots. Every summer when OC is airing, Heather will do a media mixer where everybody comes to the same spot and she'll sit down with you. And it's actually way more casual. Like you can actually, like I sat there and I didn't even record our conversation because it was like kind of loud. And it was just like kind of, it's a much more casual vibe where she just kind of wants to like catch up and chat. And, you know, she was drinking an espresso martini. And Heather Dubrow is a very welcoming and warm and relaxed woman. Like she makes you feel so comfortable and just, she remembers you, which is always really like nice and important. And it was just a really nice little, I sat down with her. I got like 7 minutes with her or whatever. Terry and her boys were there as well. And some of the things that she said to me were I was talking to her about sort of how much the show has changed since she has been back on the show, like from between her first and second run, like what are the biggest differences? Because people are doing all the sort of like behind the scenes digging and like yada, yada, yada. Because I did tell her, I was like, I think there's a little bit too much reliance this season on this like blogger, you know, Instagrammer, podcaster drama. And she was like, I hear you, I get it. But like, spoiler alert, not everybody who goes on The Bachelor is looking for love. And her implication there was like, you know, not everybody who comes on Real Housewives has the purest intentions. And I think, you know, she didn't say this outright, but she was obviously implying that this is about Katie, who's done a lot of behind the scenes, like, you know, digging. And she did acknowledge that a lot has changed in that regard since her first run. I asked her about Gina's comment on Watcher Happens Live about her, you know, being the one who had researched Katie and told Emily about this article before the reunion. And she was like, listen, like, a lot happened, you know, between filming and airing last season. And I don't remember who exactly sent which article what, but a lot of stuff was going around. And that article came out and she said she called Gina after that Watcher Happens Live appearance and they're good. And, you know, she was just sort of like, she didn't have to say that because, you know, it just felt unnecessary. So we talked a little bit about that. And she was like, she was talking about the whole Jen quote unquote fatty photo thing. And she was like, I don't think I'm the first one to have said fatty photo. I don't think that came from me. If I did, I apologize. But she was like, I think Jen looks great in that photo. I have no problem with that photo. It's like, and she also was like really honestly talking very highly of Jen. She was like, I'm so glad that she's on the show. She's such a great addition because she is so real and authentic. And I think, again, the implication is that, like, you know, we're comparing that to Katie, who I guess is less so. But yeah, she was very complimentary of Jen. And then I asked her about just sort of a lot of the, you know, the criticism of her that she and Tamara are sort of being hyper loyal to one another this season. She was like, I really don't like when people say that because we just go way back. And she was talking about how she's just trying to show Tamara a little bit more grace because of, you know, she's in therapy. She's actually working on herself. And also, like, again, one of her best friends in life, like, was given a really terrible diagnosis with brain tumors. I do think people are sort of disregarding that. And I, in the same way that I think that people in Kyle Richards' situation with Mauricio, they forget that her best friend died, her literal best friend in life. And same with now with the Teddy stuff with Kyle. And sort of like that affects everything. And maybe I'm just, you know, being a sucker, but I really do kind of, I really was buying what Heather was selling when it comes to this. And I think she was annoyed that people think it's like an alliance when in actuality, it's just like a really long friendship. And she also acknowledged when we were talking about how there's a lot of blogger and podcaster drama, she was like, the bloggers and these creators are a really important part of the ecosystem, but also trying to control the narrative through them is, in my, what I called it in my conversation with her, a fool's errand. And she agreed. Like, she was like, you know, you can, it's good to have relationships with these people, but like trying to control it via them is just never gonna work. So I had a really good chat with her. She was really open with me and really honest with me, I felt, and just a really casual, chic vibe. And that kind of the only, she's the only one who can create such an atmosphere. All right, lastly, before we get to the Valley Season 2 end of season deep dive, quickly, The Real House was a Salt Lake City trailer. It finally dropped. New season premieres on September 16th. I mean, I cannot stop thinking about Lisa calling Bronwyn a gout dick sucker. I mean, that entire exchange to me was giving that party, was to me was giving the exchange at Meredith's bat mitzvah last season. It was like when there was so much chaotic stuff going on with the high body count hair conversations. But it's like, Lisa tells Bronwyn, you should go to school. And Bronwyn says, you should go to work to help pay off all those bills. And then she calls her a gout dick sucker. I mean, that's instant canon. I'm sorry. I cannot stop thinking about it. Instantly iconic. I think it's a banger of a trailer, if you ask me. Of course, the Salt Lake City women always deliver. It makes me sad that Angie and Lisa are clearly still at odds with one another, but it's also obviously going to result in some great lines and great moments. And so, you know, I guess that's the silver lining of them not being friends, but I do prefer them as friends. And same thing with Angie and Mary. Like, they're going to have this fallout. There's this tense exchange where Mary says to Angie that she's not her sister anymore. That was tough to see because I think they're a fan favorite friendship. And I hope that that is just a bump in the road for them and not like a full on friendship break. And then it seems like Bronwyn is coming for Lisa. Like, that is going to continue. She's calling attention to Lisa's finances and things that have sort of popped up in random blogs and articles and stuff. It seems like she's maybe implying an affair with the mystery man that Angie brought up in an earlier season. So that's going to continue and be really tense. And I do think that something major will probably happen on the Greece trip at the end of the season. That's what some of the clues, I think, point to. It's interesting that Whitney was like barely in the trailer. Like, she literally, like, I feel like I have no concept of what she's involved in this season. Probably the Lisa stuff, if I'm guessing, but there's really very few clues about that. I loved the little scene of them arguing in the Halloween costumes while on the below deck boat. Like, again, Mad Libs, iconic. I'm excited about that little crossover. We saw Meredith and Lisa at Mary's church. So I think I think it's going to be like Mary, Lisa, and Meredith, and then Heather, Whitney, Angie, Bronwyn. I'm not sure where Brittany lands, but that's sort of my guess in terms of the group dynamic from what I could tell. So that's the trailer. Also this week was Taylor Swift on New Heights, her first podcast appearance ever. If you want my thoughts on that, I'm not going to repeat them. I did like a 5-minute TikTok about it, plus another follow-up one. I posted a bunch of my thoughts on Threads and the Gavin with Kip Instagram account. So if you're interested in hearing what I think about the Taylor Swift appearance on New Heights, which I also can't stop thinking about, go to those places to check my thoughts out there. Now on for the main event of the episode, the Valley end of season deep dive for season 2. Joining me to do so is Dana Reagan, the host of the Bravo Investigator podcast. She also runs a really fantastic Instagram account of the same name. So keep listening for my end of season deep dive for season 2 of the Valley. Check out the Bravo Investigator podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll see you next week. We'll
I want to gab.
All right, today we're gathering with Dana, aka the Bravo Investigator, host of the Bravo Investigator podcast. She runs a really amazing comprehensive Instagram account of the same name. I've been on Dana's podcast before and I've been meaning to have her on, and she's a true expert on the Valley. And there's, as we all know, there's been a lot going on for this season two of the Valley. And so this felt like the perfect time to finally have Dana on the show. So Dana, it's been a lot. Thank you for being here to help me break it down. How are you?
I'm good, Gibson. I'm so happy to be gabbing with you today. Been a longtime fan of your show, longtime fan of your content as well, and pretty much all your opinions. You're sort of like the king of pop culture commentary out there is what I'd say. So I've just really always enjoyed your takes, and I'm just so excited to chat with you today.
That is so nice of you. That is very kind. So you're wearing a Kristen and Luke shirt, which I love. Like, show the people, for people listening, she's wearing their engaged t-shirt that they gave out to people on the Hawaii trip. It's that's a collector's item.
I think Kristen, I think when she had posted like pictures from that night, I think then she had posted on Instagram, like in her stories, like, should we be selling this shirt on James May? And I think a lot of people were like, yeah. So I ended up having to pay so much in shipping fees because I'm in Canada. So it ended up being like an extra $40 in shipping fees. So
crazy.
The whole thing was like $70, but like, it's worth it to feel like I was part of the experience, right? I was in Hawaii.
You were there. What were they looking for? Were they looking for dolphins or something? You were right there on the boat, right? Brittany might not have been invited on the boat, but Dana, you were.
Right, exactly. Because I was never going to tell Jax. That's why I was invited and she wasn't.
There we go. You are exactly. So take me back to the beginning of season two, when we were gearing up for season two of The Valley. We just had that sort of, the first season was kind of landmark season. I think it surprised all of us in how great it was. How were you feeling at the
beginning?
Actually,
I knew it would be great.
Oh, you did?
I just want to say, I did know it would be great. Because a lot of people went into it being like, we're not going to watch this. This is stupid. But personally, I felt like the three characters that we already knew, I thought that was going to be a great transition for us because those are characters that we love. And I thought it was like an interesting, you know, sort of group that they put together because it's sort of like the best of both worlds. We've got the people that we want to watch, and then we get in this smattering of new people. And because we're watching for the people we want to watch, maybe not so much for the people we don't, we're slowly getting to know them without necessarily wanting to. And then we just get to know all these extra couples that if this cast, let's say, had been a cast of people we didn't know at all, right? Like if they had done a next-gen NYC without the Housewives kids and it was just a bunch of influencers, it may not have done as well because you sort of need that pull in
of
like
yeah.
those core characters. And from those Vanderpump Rules fans from way back, like for me, I was like, I do think this is going to be good. I don't think this is going to be boring because, yeah, people were like, this is going to be about families and that's just really boring. But we had Kristen and Jax on this show, right? Like Jax is not living the American dream, obviously. So I just knew it would be interesting. And so, sorry, I just wanted to point that out.
Okay.
I apologize for interrupting you. I always knew it would be good.
Yeah, I don't think it was going to be boring. I wasn't sure I was interested in a show built around Jax and Brittany because at that mm-hmm. point back then, like I was still really, in my mind, I still had Brittany looped in with Jax. Like they were, mm-hmm. they were a duo. And I was just like, I didn't think I was interested. And I didn't think I was interested in the new people, but you're right. It was the perfect entree. And again, a lot of us were proven wrong. So,
but yeah, I mean, back then
going into
season
it.
Season two, I mean, I hated that we didn't get a reunion, and I feel like there was so much that was left unsaid. And to be honest with you, I think that's why things just ended up getting so heated between this cast, because they're not really allowed to talk about what's going on between filming, right? So I feel like there's so much animosity that built up over time. Like, can you imagine from the end of season one to where things left off between Kristen, Janet, Michelle, all of these people? And then they can't really hash it out at a reunion. Actually, I think even more so for Zach, for example, because he's really the kind of person that needs to get his feelings out. And instead, I feel like he's had to really hold it in for all this time until it's like the appropriate times to say something. And then when he does, it comes out in this very chaotic way sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, because on the one hand, I actually liked that they didn't have a reunion because I thought that just like it helped just sort of, okay, jump back into filming. We have stuff to talk about. There's good drama. But you're right. It's a double-edged sword because on the other side, it's okay. Nothing was resolved. Nothing was. It was Because, you know, Janet and Kristen, they're going to argue regardless. Like, they're good adversaries. So, like, even if they had resolved things at every union, let's say, like, they could have honestly talked about Janet's interview with me that they talked about at the beginning of the season. Like, that could have been talked about at the reunion. And then it would have been, like, there would have been some more fresh drama between them, I'm sure. But you're right. Like, it was already up here instead of being down here. And we saw how that played out. So, before we get into all of that, we just saw the part three of the reunion. What did you think about the reunion overall? It was filmed so early in the season too. Like, as we all, like, I think that only like a couple episodes had aired at that point, and which is really abnormal. I just finished part three this morning, and I was just like, I wonder how differently it would have looked if they had filmed it, you know, 2 months later.
A lot of people said that because they felt like the fandom reaction wasn't there yet. But I disagree, because I feel like everyone went into this season still hating Janet. So I really feel like, yes, that vitriol has exceeded throughout the season, but it was always there. So I don't really feel like there would have been that much of a difference, in my opinion.
Okay.
I feel like the reunion was a little soft, in the sense that I feel like everybody was sort of walking on eggshells around Jax, including Andy, because it is such a weird, sensitive issue. I feel like people were sort of looking to Brittany to determine whether something is bad or not. I also felt like there was a lot of, like, almost like choppiness, or like not follow up with further things, like Jesse sleeping with somebody who hasn't been married in 25 years. How old is that person? Like, let's follow up, right? Like, there needs to be a little bit more here. So there was a lot of like back and forths that made no sense with no follow up.
To me, that's a reflection of just like how much information like we got this year. Like, in the show itself, we got a lot. There was a lot of drama, a lot of information. Then we have the 45-minute, it was at least half an hour of the after show almost every single week. And that was just like so much tea at all times. And it was just like, I honestly felt like so overwhelmed by all the information we got. And like, I think I've probably forgotten a lot of it because we just got so much of it. And then there was the interviews. And then there was Watch What Happens Live. And then it was a lot. And I think that it's like, it's as we'll see today, like there's probably stuff we're not going to talk about because like it's just impossible to address
to cover it all
of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. I guess I do agree with that like it maybe wouldn't have looked that different. I'm thinking maybe there's probably a couple things from the after show that they maybe would have addressed if they had all seen those episodes, which I'm guessing they hadn't, I'm guessing.
I wasn't sure about that because Danny had said something like Janet said something on the after show. And I was like, oh, so they have seen the after show. But I'm not sure how that all worked with filming, because a lot of it seemed like very tight in terms of time. Like, there was an episode of the after show that literally aired a week or less after Jax had been pulled over or something. There was some situation legal situation. And then it was brought up on camera on the after show. I'm like, that happened IRL a week ago. So I don't know. But yes, that totally makes sense. And I feel like that's happened in other shows too, where they feel like they're good, but then once they see the after show or once they see an interview, that's when things change.
Yeah, because I also feel like the after show has shown itself more in other shows' recent reunions. Like, it's become more of a thing. Like, I feel like we'll see clips of that because they haven't had any other venue to react to that. And so, and we didn't really get any of that on the Valley in terms of like flashbacks to the after show. So I feel like that maybe that's teeing things up for season three. I don't know. And then the other thing, going into the reunion, we knew that Jax was leaving the show, quote unquote. At some point in the season, there was that whole big Variety article from Kate Arthur where she got into some of the behind the scenes of like how they've been dealing with Jax and stuff like that. Obviously, in the premiere, we found out about the incident involving him and Brittany that had happened right before filming, where he threw the coffee table and the bar stools and such. And then in the reunion, we also find out about the rose bush thing where he pushed her into a rose bush. As you said, no follow up on that, which was quite interesting, I would say. It's obviously a relief that we won't have to see him anymore. Like, I'm good having him off TV. I'm glad that we're officially done now that part three has aired. But it's also kind of wild to think about the Valley without Jax Taylor, because it's not his show, but he does have a point that I don't think the show would have existed without him. It would, like, they needed Jax and Brittany along with Kristen to start this show. Doesn't make it his show, but he was integral in getting it started. So it's this weird thing.
For sure, but that doesn't mean he's entitled to be on the show for the rest of his life.
Oh,
like,
I'm not
saying
that.
You can be helping to start something and then leave it. You know what I mean?
Of course.
And I sort of feel like it's almost moot to keep talking about him. Not that we can't. I just mean, like, even on the reunion, and correct me if I'm wrong and tell me what you think, but this whole concept of narcissism, and I'm really taking what Brittany said, where she was told by a doctor, we can't cure it. So I just feel like this changes all the conversations we have. The conversations we've had with Jax for years on these reunions about him being a work in progress and he's changed today and maybe a little bit here and maybe a little bit there. We were like, okay, maybe there's an option. Maybe there's a possibility for him to change. But now I feel like there just isn't. I feel like he's a lost cause, which is sort of a sad thing to say. But that's why I feel like even for Andy to say, like, are you guys so in love with each other? First of all, it's not possible. He's a narcissist. He's not capable of love. Second of all, all these things where he's saying at the end, where he's like, Brittany, do you feel like we're going to be moving forward? Do you feel like you see a change? Let's not even have, we know that's not even a thing, right? It's not even possible. But then at the same time, and I'm not saying this in any way to defend him, and it's not that, it's actually me being kind of afraid. I'm afraid that this man has lost everything and what he's going to do that. Because he has expressed, this is the most important thing in his life, filming this show. And he has lost that, plus his bar, which is his second love. Mm-hmm. And so he has his son and that's it. But I'm just, it sucks for Brittany because, you know, he deserves this punishment. He's abusive. He doesn't deserve to have this platform. But now that means he's going to be coming after Brittany for money. He's probably also going to be really bored and bothering her a lot. And so it just sucks that the proper repercussions for something is actually going to harm somebody else.
That's so true. Yeah. And it's like, she's gotten all this some criticism for like protecting him or staying in it. But it's like, she was in an abusive relationship. Like, I'm sorry, like, easier said
I'll
than done.
And it is for
And I have never experienced that in my life, but you know, from just hearing about different situations over the years, like it's difficult to get yourself out of that, especially it's somebody you love. It's somebody you have a child with. It's somebody whose finances are totally intertwined with yours. You work together on a show and she wants to have two paychecks to help provide a life for her son, not just one. And so I completely, you know, empathize with her kind of thing on this, but I'm also so happy that she felt empowered enough to finally break out of it, call out his abuse, his drug use, you know, all the things that he's been doing behind the scenes over the years. Like she finally, like the floodgates opened from her because she felt safe and empowered enough to do that. And obviously it was a rocky road. Like there were moments where she was still corresponding with him, maybe when she shouldn't have been, or she was protecting him in certain ways.
That's normal.
Yeah, it's totally normal. But I'm just so happy that like we finally got on that road with her. And I can only imagine how much more open and free she'll feel in a third season when he's not breathing down her back on camera, you know?
Right. And she's going to be like the main character. And I don't know if you got a sense from the end, you tell me, but when they were doing the toast at the end and Brittany was doing the toast, meaning she's like the main character, I feel like Jax felt really, really small in that moment. And he was like, shit.
You know? I think you're
right. I lost it all and it went all to Brittany.
I think you're right. And it gets back to that, like the scheduling of the reunion. Cause I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, he knew he was done at the end of the reunion. But I'm like, again, this was filmed so early that like, I don't think he did. You know what I mean? Like, I think that he, again, as you said, it's the most important thing to him. Like, I think he was fed up with what you're saying and like he felt very small. But I think that he still kind of felt like he had a lifeline somehow into the show. I don't think that he envisioned it being the end for him yet.
Well, he's never been officially canceled, right? So it has always worked out for him. He has always been able to come back. Mm-hmm. And from the sense I got from the beginning of the reunion, Brittany said he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to continue on the show. So my opinion is that maybe there was still conversations happening and maybe production wanted to see how the rest of the season played out. But yeah, I don't think he necessarily knew in that moment, but it's never officially happened for him. It's always sort of ended up working out. Even when he left Vanderpump Rules, that was only sort of brought up very recently that was actually more so a firing. Because back then, it was discussed as a mutual agreement. And this is such a random memory of mine. But I remember Amy Schumer being on Watch What Happens Live with Andy. And she was saying, well, Jax was fired. And he goes, no, he wasn't fired. She's like, oh, okay. And I actually remember that because I was like, oh, okay. He's clarifying that it wasn't that situation. It was a mutual discussion and a mutual agreement. So I just thought that was interesting because it seems more so now that is what had happened.
Yeah, I think that's it's like I want to think that he was just like full on fire, but I don't even know. Maybe that wasn't the case this time. Maybe it was a mutual thing. And I feel like around the time of like the Variety article and then just like I'm so curious what the catalyst was for it to officially like be decided between them. Because I think the decision was later than we all think it was.
Yeah. Oh, I agree for sure. I really think it was maybe a week before we got the news officially all out. Yeah.
And I mean, again, I don't even want to rehash it, but it's like thinking about like the whole like quote unquote rehab he was in and the homemade confessionals we got this season from him and just like the rage texting. And it was just like, I think, as you said,
that the stalking was wild, right? And how he, but it was the defense of it too, because every action that he would do that was bad, he'd apologize because he knew he'd need to, but then he'd say, who wouldn't do that? Who wouldn't have taken that action? And everybody's like, not I, right? None of your friends have done those things. And I have to tell you, because I have to listen to his podcast for quote unquote work, and I feel like he's still in this mentality of like, I feel like everyone is doing the same things as me, so I don't understand why I'm the only one who are getting this repercussions. And that just shows that he doesn't understand, and he never will. If at this point you still don't understand how it was different with you and how you are so much more abusive, we didn't see Jesse Lally, you know, like stalking Michelle through cameras. Like, I'm not saying he's great either, but, you know, there's levels of toxicity of Bravo Man,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's all
and
relative.
Jeff Taylor is all the way up there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm like, is there anything else to say about Jack? No. I'm just saying, is there anything else to say about Jack? I'm like, I feel like we're all kind of in agreement on it, honestly. And like,
yeah, it's the one thing the Bravo fandom can agree on.
Yeah, literally. It's like, I want to say one of my big takeaways from it is just that, like, I do feel like Brittany just showed how great of a mother she is, how devoted to Crew she is. And the way she talks about his autism diagnosis and like, just that she is so utterly devoted to him. And I just admire that a lot. Like, regardless of how you feel about how she's handling herself and the friendship stuff that she has going on this season, like, she's getting out of a difficult situation. Jax will always be in her life because he's the father of her son. But I'm just happy for this path she's on. I really am.
Completely agree. Can I make a comment on the friendship stuff? Because I have a thought.
Yeah. Well, so we're gonna because I want to start with Jana and Kristen, because that is where we started the season in terms of all of that. And we'll kind of branch off. Obviously, big conflict of the season, central conflict. Mm-hmm. I feel like they are really good adversaries. I like them. I like them battling against each other. Like, they clearly grind one another's gears and they can't help one another. They can't help it. They're both pot stirrers. They're both polarizing figures in different ways. But it started with an interview that Jana did on this podcast. And she made the claim that Zach and Kristen had wished that she had not carried her baby to term. She apologized for, what did you say?
There was another piece to that. There was another piece to that.
I know, but that was not on
my podcast.
Oh,
that wasn't on your pod?
That was not my podcast, no.
Okay.
She apologized for looping Kristen into it, but she's not going to apologize for the Zach thing because he did say it. And the other thing that he did say is it kind of trickled out, but it officially kind of came out that he had also said that he wished that she had succeeded in killing herself. And I thought, I believe Janet completely. And I thought, because Brittany told her that, he said this to Brittany and Brittany told her.
Right.
And I don't think that he really took full ownership of that at the reunion. I think that he sort of shied away from it and sort of they brush his bad drunk behaviors as him drinking. And it's like, everybody has bad behavior when they drink, but I don't know anybody who's ever wished somebody had to have a miscarriage when they're drunk and just be, you know, shoved off. So I've just been talking a lot, but what do you make of how that whole situation played out as we're in relation to what Jana repeated about what Zach said?
So yeah, it was really complicated. I remember it coming out on your podcast and there being a lot of back and forth in the
social media
comments.
Yeah.
Kristen was saying that, of course, like, stop trying to make it seem like we don't care about mental health. Let's talk about the reason you went for that 51-50 hold, and then just sort of left it there. Then you have Janet saying things like, Kristen Doty, your best friend, wished that I had committed suicide and miscarried, and you never apologized to me at all. So again, there was just so much of that happening behind the scenes, so much built up animosity about it. When Janet went to apologize, It was a little complicated because she was saying, like, I'm sorry for wrapping you into Zach's demonic behavior. Kristen is the type of friend that will back you no matter what. She is your ride or die, doesn't matter what you say. While there's, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, I'm just talking about different styles of friendship. Then you have friends who are more like, check you. And then you have the friends that are like, defend you to your face, but put you in your place behind your back. And so I just sort of feel like, you know, she's defending Zach to the death on this. And it's a really disgusting comment. And I don't really feel like he was that sorry. My understanding was that he sort of sent like a canned apology, like a very like cryptic, like, I have to apologize because I'll have to do this to stay on the show. So of course that's going to continue to be upsetting for her. I guess maybe I'll just speak a little personally about like the comments in general. Like, I've never been pregnant, but the other comment, like, that kind of struck a chord for me. Like, I've had suicidal ideation in the past. And so I But I've also been the kind of person who's maybe joked about it here and there, which was another comment that Kristen had made, like, you've joked about it here and there. So I can understand that mentality, but I'm trying to picture in my head somebody screaming that about me, and I don't think I could ever speak to them again. You know, to me, that comment, the second one, and probably because I've never been pregnant, and probably the pregnancy comment would be more gross to someone who has been. But the other comment to me was just, it shook me.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally makes sense. And it's like, it was just individually, either of those is enough to end a friendship. And I think the back-to-back like blows of saying those two things, I get Janet not wanting to be associated with that. Yeah. But it's hard because she roped Kristen into it, and sort of, I think she almost wants Kristen to like answer for some of Zach's stuff because he's not doing it maybe. And like,
that's not fair.
I think that that's not fair. And I feel like, I think to me, one of Janet's biggest issues is just like the way that she tries to take accountability is not like a full version of that. You know what I mean? It's sort of like on her terms. I think she wants to take accountability sometimes. And, you know, she is a pot stirrer, but she won't really fully admit it sometimes. Her and Kristen both talk about one another to Brittany for sure. No question about it in my mind. But like Janet is way more reticent to admit that. So those are the things that I feel like with Kristen in particular, it's like, she's not getting there. You know, she's not doing herself any favors when it comes to that.
But I do want to mention something else, because again, we just don't have a lot of the context. But when this show started, and Janet had pointed out they hadn't been good for a year, there was also the comment that Kristen had brought up in this episode, which I actually remembered from season one, where in the confessional, Janet had said, like, you know, Kristen kind of made it seem like her ex-boyfriend Alex was like the most terrible person, but I was around during that time and I saw her do things that were wrong, and she admitted to that being wrong. And like, picture you as the friend, right? Watching that on screen, thinking, and I do remember that Janet also put up a boundary with her around that time. So that's probably what was going on in that year prior and why they weren't good. But at the same time, now looking back, I could kind of understand how Kristen was upset going into that season, or even seeing that, thinking like, you were my close friend at the time, and now you're saying on TV that like I was the one in the wrong in that relationship. That makes her look so bad. Do you know what I mean? And so I'm not blaming Janet necessarily for that, but there keeps being like little things
revisionist
that
history,
keep
I would say.
Doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some revisionist history, I think, that happens. And it's like, it's hard to tell also, like, because a lot of this stuff, part of the reason why the after show of it all is like, I love it, but
so
I also
context.
Get kind of, there's so much off camera stuff too that's like, there's so much like his word against her word and her word against her word. It's like, but I think that the confessional was on the season. And I totally understand Kristen's questioning, you know, Janet changing for the show and bringing up things that maybe she would have spoken about differently before cameras went up and all of that. And the other thing that comes into play here is like, you know, Kristen has been stoking the fires of the flame of Janet being a fan and how Janet came into the group. And I'm sort of exhausted by that narrative, to be honest. Like, I'm kind of over
100%.
It. I do think it sort of reminds me of Tamara on OC right now, how she like is bringing up this idea that Jen Pedranti tried on her hair extensions, and then it makes it so she wants to like be single white femaling her, and like she wants to be her and be in her. It's not that serious, I don't think. I think that it was probably some sort of middle ground also to this whole thing of like, yeah, she was a fan. She probably thought it was cool that she was talking to the Vanderpump Rules cast members, but like, these people aren't letting in just anybody. And so like, there's a bill, I don't know. It's just that narrative has been big in their friendship, and I'm kind of, or they're in their dynamic, and I'm kind of over it.
I'm over it. And I also feel like it's trying to create a certain image, a narrative of like, she's scary, she's dangerous, she's like a stalker fan.
Yeah.
When like, Gibson, weren't you at like Lindsay Hubbard's baby shower?
I mean,
like, after a while, we all get involved with these people because, I mean, she wasn't a podcaster, for example. She met her in an organic way, or she and I mean. But, you know, if I go to BravoCon and I run into the Vanderpump Rules cast and they ask me to come to lunch with them, I'm not saying no. Mm-hmm. And if they want to become my friend, I'm really not going to say no, right? And like, as we continue to interact with these people, especially you and I in this industry, you do sort of slowly maybe become friends with them. And we're obviously dealing with that on OC as well. And that dichotomy, whether that's like an appropriate thing or a not appropriate thing, or where it's like seedy and gross, or whether it's normal. And it's confusing, but she's been in the group for 8 years. Like, I'm sorry, that's a long game. That's a really long game.
Yeah.
I'm not on that. Just on that one front, I think that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think you mentioned how long they've sort of been in the same circle. It's like, that is a reminder, though, that like, maybe why this dynamic is so kind of compelling and kind of interesting is because there is so much there and there's so much for them to bring back up. And maybe it's things that they have secretly sort of been carrying and they haven't addressed with one another. And like that is why, as you said, this show is always going to work, because there is this like really intense history with these people. And Kristen's probably felt this about Janet since the beginning. It was probably this sort of like, even though they were quote unquote best friends, I guess, for a while there before the show started, that was probably a thing in the back of her head of like maybe being a little suspicious of how Janet came into the group, but she still liked her enough to be her friend. But now, now she's bringing it up. You know what I mean? Now she's kind of unearthing it.
I mean, I used to listen to them together on Kristen's podcast, like for years. They were very close. And like,
I believe it.
Yeah. I mean, and I do think it is the Alex situation that sort of tipped it off. But we didn't know Janet as a fandom until season one. And then we're being told that she's changed. So we don't know any different. We only have the other cast members who claim to have known her before to rely on, because we didn't know her then. That's the only real thing that's bothering me about her, is that she'll just never take any ownership for anything, and then we'll always try to flip it back on somebody else. And that's just where I struggle, because even when Kristen is being messy, because honestly I feel like they're quite the same, right? Like you have Janet putting herself in situations that are none of her business, i.e. the job of reality TV. You have Kristen saying at the end of the episode 3, one of my like things that I'm known for is getting involved in other people's business when it's not my business,
and
right?
She'll admit
it. Girls are the same, but she'll say, I'm a jerk. I did this to be a jerk. And while you don't have Janet doing the same, I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I think Janet would be really wise going forward to take a page from Kristen's book in that way. You're absolutely correct on that. No, honestly,
she would hate to hear that.
She would, but it's like I want her. I just want her to be slightly more in on the joke if she can. Maybe because of like all the hate she's gotten, she's become even more sort of like self-serious. I think she's really sensitive, and I understand that. But that if you're in this job, like you gotta try to sand that down a little bit. You know what I mean? You have to try to push back against that.
Because she really focuses on words, and you know, she determines the meaning behind them. Like a word, I mean, I can say the word apple, and if I say apple, it means apple. But if I say apple, that could be very aggressive. And if I'm like apple, that could be like flirty, right? So she will sometimes take words to mean more than they were meant to mean. And I thought that was an interesting scene we saw in the finale between Janet and Kristen, where Kristen's like, you know me. You know I use colorful words, right? And like, I mean, I used to call my cat a whore. Like, I don't mean she's an actual whore. It's just like something I would say. So if Janet knows Kristen and knows that's how she talks, I don't really understand why she doesn't get that. Unless she was always that way and maybe always took words very seriously. I don't know.
Right. And the other thing that I think that has kind of not done Janet any favors, I think there's a slight hypocrisy in here, but, you know, Janet and Jason have sort of taken it upon themselves. I don't think that Jasmine necessarily asked them to do this, but they have sort of been her crusaders in this whole thing with Danny. And I think that on the one hand, it's admirable they're trying to be good friends, but on the other, they're trying to make her issue their issue. And that is, to me, the part of this that I think is a little bit just, they shouldn't be doing that. And obviously, as word choice, they're sort of technically labeling it as like sexual assault. And then I do think there's a slight hypocrisy in that, like, Kristen is allowed to be Danny and Nia's crusader. Like, she's allowed to come. I think the difference is that Danny and Nia sort of gave her the go to do it, and while Jason and Janet did not get the green flag from Jasmine, it seems. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is the difference. But I do think there's a slight thing there.
But I do think by the end, like, I really don't think I don't think Janet was necessarily, like, by the end really still sticking up for Jasmine, because they weren't really close by the end of it. I mean, think about the beach scene. So anytime after the beach scene that Janet is bringing up the Danny stuff, I don't think she was really doing it to protect Jasmine.
And also Kristen brought them up on the boat.
Right.
She did. Right. Like, she did. Like, Janet went there, but Kristen brought them up.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athletic-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps.
You got this.
And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for Doggy Dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS store. Visit the upsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
We'll get into Danny and Nia in a second, but I just want to pause on the Zach, Kristen, Brittany, Janet friendship dynamic, I've spoken about this on my podcast and how I think it's just like really natural and compelling. And like, it's clearly that is like a real thing that's going on in this four person group. It's like they're all playing tug of war over Brittany. You know what I mean? And like, I think that's a real thing that's happening. I think Brittany doesn't know how to handle it. I think that Brittany is a good friend to all of them in the way that she can be without. I don't think that she ever kind of, buys into the shit talking that they all probably do about each other to her. But that's a really difficult position to be in. And I think in the reunion, we saw like a couple times where they're like, right, Brittany, like, didn't you say that? Or didn't? And she kind of had to back down a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, we kind of witnessed that because she, again, is in the middle of all of this. What do you make of this tug of war over Brittany Cartwright? Like, it's quite interesting.
First of all, like, good for you, girl. So many people are so obsessed with you. But here's what I have to say. This is my opinion on it all. And I think it's like more of an overarching thought. Brittany is going through an extremely contentious divorce with somebody who is harassing her, stalking her. She's basically a single mom right now. She's raising an autistic child. She does not have time or the bandwidth to be your guys' best friends in the way that maybe you need. And if she is not being able to be the friend that you need, then bye. Because, you know, as we grow and we age, our friendships change. They ebb and flow. She's totally. A mother now. I mean, the friend that Zach, for example, Zach and Brittany, when they were friends in their 20s, that's going to be a different friendship than now. And so I honestly thought it was not cool for any of these people to continuously bring this up to her this season when she is going through so much. Like, I'll give an example. I had a friend who was married to a narcissist, had 3 kids, was going through this whole divorce. And do you know what my friendship expectations were her during that time? Zero. Because she is going through so much. I'm not like, why aren't you calling me back? Why aren't you spending time with me? Because she's fucking busy. You know what I mean? She's going through a lot. Like, it's just, to me, wild that you're making someone try to play this tug of war. Also, I don't know how you feel on it, because like, I always kind of go back and forth. But like, if I'm not friends with someone anymore, would I love my friends to also follow suit? Of course. But I can't require it.
No.
And it wouldn't be fair. In my heart of hearts, is that what I want? Of course. But I just don't think it's fair for anyone to be asking her to stop being friends with the other.
Yeah. And I think that the one caveat to that would be like, if some big thing happens, I think Kristen and Janet both view what one another has done to each other as like a big enough thing for Brittany to call it off between the other. But Brittany doesn't see it that way, right? So it's this weird, like, they're all interpreting things differently. And just, I also think it's a lot of this is like Zach and then Kristen are sort of Brittany's older friends. They've known her for longer. And Janet's a newer presence in this group. And that is a classic thing, as you said. You know, people change and friendships evolve and lifestyles change. And sometimes like the old friends get really frustrated just because there is a new friend, a new best friend in the mix.
Right.
And I actually, my read on it kind of is that Brittany is a little bit more loyal to Janet, or like she kind of has, maybe not more loyal to her. Maybe that's the wrong way to put it. I think that she connects more with Janet in a sort of more natural way right now than she does with Zach and Chris. And I think they're fighting hard to push against that in a way. They don't make it easy for either side of the group, but there's a disconnect.
You know what's funny? It's because they're saying to her, we don't understand how you're still friends with her. We don't get how you like her. Well, guys, you were very close friends with Janet at some point. So it's probably for whatever reasons, Brittany.
That's true.
Is friends with her now, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Zach and Kristen and Janet's friendship is not in a good place. So they don't want to spend time with her and don't enjoy her as a person. But Brittany and Janet's friendship has remained stable. So all the things that Kristen and Zach may have liked about Janet before they hated Janet, Brittany still gets from Janet.
Right, right. And then like, I just think of this idea, and we can explore this a little bit deeper at the very end, but of like, let's say Sheena is added to this cast in a bigger way for next season. She is on the Janet side of that, and that complicates it even more. But then, and like, I feel like Sheena has a maybe better chance of being more prominent and on this show than Lala does right now. But like, you know, then Sheena's like a guest on Watch What Happens Live when Zach's on. And did Zach appear at one of Sheena's book tour events or something? Like,
yeah.
So they're not like not speaking to one another. So there's this really interesting.
But they weren't, and they recently
right. But it's like that. But if like I guess Zach unblocked Janet, so maybe there is hope. I don't know. I don't know what to think of it, but I am personally compelled by it. I really am. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting.
So I'm actually curious if they're still unblocked, because remember that was filmed so long ago, and there's been so much happening online since, even just between the two of them fighting. So, I mean, my understanding is that the way the reunion sort of ended was like, yeah, we'll all start working on our friendships, and that
and
things just
airs.
Got way, way, way worse. Yeah. I think that Janet even blocked Jasmine just because of all the things that Jasmine has been saying about her online. And even Kristen says that. She's like, Jasmine, you can't sit here and say like, oh, Janet, yeah, we're like sisters. We're like family. And so I'll always love you. And Kristen's like, you talk a lot of shit about her in our group chat. So it is two-faced.
I don't really have a good grasp on Jasmine's true, like,
motive.
I feel like she talks out of both sides of her mouth and like doesn't really back it up at the reunion. She wasn't really backing it up. I like that she's kind of playing both sides of the fence. Like, I think that's good for reality TV. It's good for the show. But I don't have a good grasp on like, what her motive is, or what who she's really loyal to. I don't really, do you have a good grasp on that?
I feel, you know, Jason alluded to her trying to be manipulated by Luke and Kristen, and I don't think it's that. I think, you know, she came into the first season, didn't have much of a storyline. She also didn't have much of a storyline this season. I really don't know why the engagement wasn't shown on camera. That would have been great. Mm-hmm. But I felt like she sort of had to go where the wind was blowing. And the only reason I say that about her specifically is because she's the only one who had a real longstanding friendship with Janet. They used to live in the same building. They've been friends for many, many years. And I still don't understand what it is that Jasmine is upset about with Janet. Even at the beach, she's not actually saying it, except for like, you're a vibe killer, you're giving Karen energy, et cetera, but not like, one time you said X to me and that upset me. Like, I'm still just trying to figure out what is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you still see her saying to Jason, like, I love you, Jason. You're amazing. And Jason, thank you so much for standing up for me with the Danny stuff. What are you talking about? I thought you wanted them not to talk about it. Right. So I feel like she's just doing it for the clout. And I hate to say that. I really do. But like, she doesn't seem to be genuine to me. I feel like she's just going with the popular vote.
That's a good way to put it. I do. And I'm glad that we did get she got more camera time this season. Like, I think that was one of the biggest raps against season one, was sort of like Zach and her both sort of being relegated to like side characters. And we did get more from both of them. I think with Zach and Jasmine, I really liked Zach's scenes with Benji and hearing more about that story. I thought that was really like, that was new. You know, that was a very, like, we don't really hear much about that kind of thing. And I like that we saw a little bit of both Benji and Melissa, but neither of them really pops on camera. You know what I mean? Like, they clearly have good relationships. They seem like good people and they seem happy together. But I think that maybe is like, out of all these couples, like, their other half, like, isn't maybe made for TV in the way that the other couples are. On both sides.
Maybe, but maybe we don't even know. Like, Benji did not even hear his voice until Melissa was screaming on the boat. She was like, stop talking. I was like, they just got potential.
Maybe.
Screaming.
I don't know. I'm not convinced. I'm happy to be proven wrong. But that to me was like, I think if producers saw even more potential in that, maybe we would have seen more. I don't know. That's my hunch about it. I said I would loop back to Danny and Nia. I know that the viewers do not agree with me. I think that it's clear that Danny is a really bad drunk. He becomes a creep and a perv, and he has a track record of, I'm not saying, as Janet was maybe implying, that he's always grabbing women. I think that's happened maybe once, maybe twice, but he has been kicked out of bars, we've heard. Nia's always dragging him out when he's drinking, always dragging him out early and speaking for him. I think the thing where Brittany felt uncomfortable, she had clearly told Michelle that. And then in the reunion, it was another one of those instances where she walked back whatever she said to downplay it. I think that she genuinely felt uncomfortable that night that she was talking about, where he was hitting on her. And so I think it's very clear. I don't think he's an alcoholic. I don't think he has like some like day-to-day drinking problem, but I think that he's a bad drunk. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe the way it should have. But I think that the way that it was sort of, you know, the implications that were being made by Janet and Jason and sort of the... I think it was made to feel like a bigger thing. So I think that that's where it went wrong. But I do believe at the core, there is an issue there, personally.
I agree. And I think I completely concur with you, because I think what they were doing was, you know, you have this other guy, Jax Taylor, there, who is an actual alcoholic, and mm-hmm. you have other people on the cast who are way bigger drinkers. So it really seemed like they were focusing so much on this.
Totally.
I kind of agree with Jason when he's like, everyone on this stage has a problem with alcohol, because I'm sorry, they do. This is why this cast works. And it's, but the problem is you can't berate someone into admitting to having a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. Think about last year with Shannon and Tamara on OC, right? Mm. You can't scream at someone that you're an alcoholic and actually expect that they're going to go home and stop drinking. That's mm-hmm. not realistic. And it is possible that Danny and Nia are having these conversations offline, and or maybe they're not. Maybe he's not even in a place to be ready to admit that yet. And that's also okay. You can't get mad at someone for not being in that place yet to admit that they have a problem, I guess, right? That sort of feels weird.
You can get mad at him for making people uncomfortable and yes, grabbing somebody's
absolutely.
Butt. And so it's like, yes. I totally agree. And I think that it was just mishandled on the Jana and Jason side. What also, as you sort of were getting at, what also hurt their case was that they, and I'm guessing they were doing this to protect Brittany and to help her, but like they didn't have the same ire for Jax that they showed on camera. Like they didn't bring it to him in that same way. And I think that, again, they were trying to be sensitive to the situation, but it came across as making Danny feel like he was his you know, misdeeds were way bigger than Jax, which is like they're on different levels completely. And so that was really where they lost people, I think, with this, because at the core, there was something there. There was.
Right.
But they latched onto the wrong things, I think, in the wrong way.
Yeah. And then even in the third reunion with Janet saying, like, we do have to keep talking about this. He has to take accountability. And he did, though. Like, if we're still talking about the Jasmine incident, he did. And so that's what just made it so complicated. And like, if you're right, and if this is true, that he is a bad drunk and he has done these creepy things before, now no one is going to believe that. And everyone is sort of going to downplay all of that because of the way that Janet mishandled this situation. Do you know what I mean? Because if you even look at the situation about the second incident, which is the I like little girls in short skirts or something like that,
right,
that he allegedly
said
at a bar, right? So first, Janet said that she heard that from Jason. And Jason said, I didn't say that. Then Brittany said, I didn't say that, right? So it's sort of like it takes away the credibility of the incident. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that's like, and that was one of the rare instances where Jason really strayed from Janet. You know what I mean? It's interesting they wouldn't have had their story kind of correct in that moment, right. I would say.
And the producer called her on that too. Like, we just talked to Jason and he said no.
Right. And I think getting into that, it's like, I think the other thing that sort of, I think, hurts Jason and Janet overall, sort of in this situation, but also just beyond this, we don't get that much personal story from them. And I don't think that's their fault. Like, I'm sure they're filming personal scenes. There's no way they're not. They're all filming personal scenes. That's how the show works. But the producers and the editors will cut things down to make room for the good drama. And I think that Jason and Janet, they get very involved, particularly Janet, very involved in other people's issues. And she's playing a role here. She's being a pot stirrer, and that is a good thing for a reality show. But I think, one, we have to see that versus maybe a not as interesting personal scene. You know what I mean? I don't think Jason and Janet have that much drama in their life as a couple. I think they're a pretty solid couple. And so
that's what they said, right? They said we're a boring couple. So maybe that's why those scenes got cut.
Exactly. And what's going to be the first thing that gets cut when you need to make time is a boring personal scene. And that's what happens on every Bravo show. There's so much that gets cut. And then it makes it so on the show, that's all we're seeing of them is being involved in other people's issues. And so it's like,
that's a great point.
That's where it does themselves a disservice, I guess. I guess they can't control what makes it into the show, but you know.
No, but I think that the fandom's opinion or viewpoint, because like this is something we know a little bit just more behind the scenes, just because we do this sort of work, or I didn't until a second ago. I was just like, are they filming personal scenes? But like a lot of people in the fandom were saying, well, they're just focusing on everybody else because they're boring and there's no drama. And so that's what's going on. But yeah, that may not be the case. They may actually be filming all those scenes. But yeah, I mean, very statistically, Bravo takes out scenes that don't have drama in them. That happens all the time. So
yeah,
maybe they are correct when they say their relationship is boring and production wants to focus on the drama that they're creating with others, because them sitting at home with their baby just apparently isn't interesting.
And that is all great for their real life relationship and marriage and family. It's not good for their public image on the show. And so it's this weird, you got to take one or the other. You can't have it all. I hope they can get it more balanced for them, just for their sake, honestly, in the future. But right now, it's completely unbalanced for them. And that is not, that's not the best. Is there anything else to say about Nia and Danny? I find them to be kind of boring, to be honest. Like, I'm not super intrigued by them. I think they seem like a pretty solid couple and they seem to be on the same page, which is great. Is there anything else to say from your perspective on them?
I think they're a nice couple. It's interesting that people were saying in the comments, like, you know, get rid of Janet and Jason and give Danny and Nia a show called Four Under Four. And it's like, guys, remember in season one, not much was going on, right? Like, we're only focusing on Danny because Janet is making us focus on Danny. So I honestly think a show about them and their four kids would be pretty boring.
Never happening.
But I want to point something out. With Jax Taylor now being gone, like, we were focusing on Danny anyway, but with Jax Taylor being gone, so our real drug addict being gone, now they have to find the next best one, right? So I think it's possible we are still going to be focusing on Danny and his drinking next season, or another one of these men and their drinking.
Also, I'm sorry, wanting a show about Nia and Danny and their kids. Like, what if, this is where I feel like this season in the Valley, I have felt more, less aligned with the viewership than I maybe ever have. Like, it's just, what do you want to watch? I'm like, that is not, it, like, even Tardy for the Party is better than that. Like, I just don't, and again, like, they seem like very nice people, but I'm like, that is not an interesting reality show. I'm sorry. It's just not.
Like, I think people don't understand the concept of a necessary villain. However, I don't think that Janet and Jason are the best villains. Like, I think Jesse Lally is a lovely villain. He's like a nice light toxicity, but whatever Janet and Jason are doing is kind of like an annoying villain, I guess. And so it's just not landing the same way. While, like, I feel like with Tamara, well, maybe you're 50-50, but like a lot of the fandom does understand that she's a necessary evil. Mm-hmm. While here, nobody's on that board. But again, I think it's because they're just not doing a great job as villains.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I think people like hate to hate them versus love to hate them. That's sort of the general sentiment. All right. Last big topic. And I wanted to save the other big couple for the end here. Jesse and Michelle.
Oh, I forgot about them.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, and that's like, Jesse and Michelle were kind of the moment on this season. And like, I thought it was, that was good drama to me. And they're like, they can't help themselves by just going at one another. Where did you, for me, it was a roller coaster with them. Where did you find yourself sort of, where was the wind blowing you within their drama this year?
I hate to admit, like, wanting to be on his side because, you know, as a strong feminist, like, I just felt very weird being on the side of this, like, toxic man, right? And over time, I've sort of been able to articulate what it is, I think. Okay. And, or even Michelle was able to articulate what it is in the reunion. She's like, I'm quiet. I'm not emotional. I am sort of stoic. While Jesse is a very emotional man and he cries. And it's hard for us not to, you know, succumb to an emotional man, right? Like, a man is crying, you know, it's hard not to want to give him a hug. And so, but he's also funny and she's not funny. And so it's difficult because he's saying these horrific things, right? He's calling her a whore. He's being awful. And even bringing up the cheating on camera was awful because he promised her he wouldn't. And then he kept doing it. So I understand on her perspective why she kind of kept, you know, freaking out and having a difficult season. That totally made sense. While he's on the other end enjoying these little digs at her, right? So it's hard because you see in the reunion where he'll be like, he speaks very calmly and softly, you know, you're weaponizing Isabella, right? But if you say it like that, it makes you sound like you're a really sweet man. While I think on the back end, he really is awful. If we, like, these stories about not letting Isabella see the grandmother, I mean, these things sound really awful, but because we're not really seeing them fully play out, we're not really seeing it fleshed out. We only get these little bits. And then Jesse will top it off with something hilarious. We're like, we love him.
Yeah, so, he's charming.
I know. I feel for her. I do. I feel like this was a really shitty situation, shitty divorce. And now her and Aaron are no longer together. So that sucks, especially bringing your daughter into a home with somebody else. And
yeah,
probably Jesse is on the other end being like, I told you so.
Of course, he's rubbing it in her face.
Oh, 100%. But I think they're really interesting to watch. That being said, I feel like a lot of people are like, are we going to keep seeing them? And, you know, because their relationship itself is over. So we would be watching them, I guess, separately. But it is odd to see them on, like, cast trips together or interacting together outside of Isabella. But yeah, I still find them interesting. And when I was watching season one, and I'm sure you feel the same way, the fact that these two people were ever happy is wild to me. I cannot picture it. Even when they show us old pictures, I still find it wild. And I remember watching season one and thinking, I wish we had a little more backstory on these people. And that's sort of kind of one of the down parts of not knowing these people from the beginning, like we did with Jax, Brittany, and the other one, Kristen. And so I feel like, you know, I feel like we just didn't get a lot of that. But at the same time, as we've grown to know them, I've grown to really find them interesting. I know a lot of people feel like Michelle is boring, but them together or their contention together, I find quite interesting.
Yeah. And I actually don't even find her boring. Like, I think that probably what even makes it feel more that way is that, like, her voice is so...
The voice, yeah.
Her delivery is so, like, dry and whatever. I don't really find her boring. And I think, like, I like when she gets activated, too. And she gets activated. Like, they both get activated. Mm-hmm. And that's good. And I think they both sort of, like, massage the truth a little bit to make it look good from their side of the fence. Yeah. I think they've both done things wrong in their marriage. And I think you're right. Like, it's hard to imagine them really happy together. I feel like they actually... From what I'm picking up, they were really happy before they had a kid, and that really broke their relationship. But they both obviously are very... I think they both seem like good parents, Isabella, generally. Mm-hmm. Like, I think but that hurt their relationship, I think.
Yeah.
I think they had, like, it sounded like they had, like, a really, like, you know, high life lifestyle. Like, they were, like, living large and maybe beyond their means, as we've heard. I would say that Jesse being his own lawyer and, like, drawing out their divorce just for shits and gigs, like, and, like, draining her bank account, which is how she's paying for their daughter's life. That, to me, is, like, tells me everything I need to know. I agree. He's so charming. I do enjoy watching him. I think he does have a sweet side. But I do think behind the scenes, he's doing way more of the dirty work. And I think that he uses the fact that she cheated on him to sort of cloak all of that and make it okay. Can you, from my perspective, did she only admit to cheating, like, by kissing somebody else, or did she admit to cheating, like, having, like,
it was
like sleeping?
Confusing.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about what she has acknowledged and admitted to. Do you know?
I believe all she has acknowledged and admitted to is kissing someone, and then
okay.
I think she dated someone as well. But no, I don't think she admitted to sleeping with someone. But it was confusing because we were getting, again, all these little bits of stories. And this person that Kristen was talking about, who's that, right? Like, I'm still confused. And then there was somebody that Luke was talking about where he's like, Michelle was seeing someone and then walked in on him. Who's that, right? So how many guys are there in Quentin Tarantino, right? So how many guys are there?
Still, I know, confusing. It's confusing. It's really confusing. And, like, I think Jesse is sort of taking liberty still. He doesn't believe that Aaron and Michelle didn't have any overlap with him. And I think that she has denied that fully. But so I think that's maybe where... So that part is still a lot of gray area. I think that he uses that to sort of excuse his own sort of, you know, fucking with her, basically. That's what he's doing at the end of the day. And I think that he has this girlfriend. And it was so... I think one of the most interesting parts of the whole reunion was Andy shutting Jesse down over the girlfriend, like, having an issue with them wanting to have a camera in her face when she showed up to a film event. And he was like, dude, we're on a fucking TV show. That the people who are wanting to mic your girlfriend are doing their jobs. And that was the part of that fire was because she's sent all these cease and desist to people, and they've cut things. I know for a fact they've cut things out of the show about people talking about her. And because of that, like, she's threatening legal action, so it's threatening production. And that's sometimes when Andy gets the most activated, because it's sort of hitting it sort of taints the, like, the, not the, the authenticity of the show, but it sort of taints the production of the show, because you know what I mean? And, like, so his girlfriend thing, I don't know how we're going to possibly follow that thread if she has legal issues with being chatted about.
For sure. And the one thing I sort of have to disagree with Andy on is, like, you can't force her. I mean, she hasn't signed anything, right? Like, put a boom over her head, but, like, until she signs a release, you can't really do anything with that. My understanding is she doesn't want to be on the show. And we've had this before, right? Like, Stassi and Patrick, Lala and Randall, you know, Jesse cannot force her to be on the show. It would be ideal, obviously. I don't know what's going to happen in that going forward, but I do know that she has a really traumatic past. I don't know if you know about it. She was kidnapped in her early 20s. So I feel like there's just, like, a lot in her life that, you know, she has a whole podcast about it. She's, like, a mental health advocate and everything. So I think there's, like, a little more to it about being on camera and being on TV than just, being talked about.
But the difference between those situations that you talked about where they weren't on camera, they could still be talked about. And this woman doesn't want them to say her name or to talk about her at all. That's prohibitive. You know what I mean? And like, it's honestly like the kind of thing where I'm like, Jesse seems like maybe the kind of guy that he could like, if he knows that his relationship is holding back his career, I could see him dumping her, to be honest. Like, unless things change.
I mean, I hear they're breaking up all the time, right?
So okay, so like, I could see her being in the past if that's really holding him back. And he doesn't want to be on the bad side of Andy. Come on. Like, he wants to be beloved by Andy, as they all do. But he especially, you can tell. And so I could see that moment sort of rocking him a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, it rocked me. It rocked Zach. He like grabbed Jasmine's arm. He's like,
it's
almost
wild.
Like, you know, daddy giving you a spanking sort of situation.
Yeah.
Daddy Andy.
Yeah. And the last thing I kind of want to mention is I saw right before we signed on to record this, you put a clip out from your podcast about this where you talked about how the Michelle and Kristen dynamic was really not explored this season, even though there's a lot there. Like, even in this part three of the reunion, there was unaired footage of Michelle having an issue putting on the shirt that you're wearing.
That I'm wearing. How dare you, Michelle? It's a great shirt. And you got it for free.
That's a loaded dynamic. And we didn't really explore that, as you pointed out. And I think that's especially interesting given the new alliance between Kristen and Jesse this season, which was exactly that, an alliance in my perspective, at least from the beginning. Maybe it turned into a real friendship. So that's something that I have my eye on since you pointed it out. I'm like, that you have a point there. You really do.
I wonder, I mean, I don't know the reason. I wonder if maybe Michelle just thought it was best to sort of just stay quiet, given how she could see what was happening between Janet and Kristen, and that wasn't going well. We did see that one scene between them at the Mexican restaurant, which was shut down pretty quickly, but that was really their only interaction this season. And it's like, they ended season one on terrible terms. We're on the same cast, but we're like sort of not talking to each other. And also nobody noticed, you know, isn't that odd that like, we're all on the same cast, but there's these two people that no one seemed to notice, didn't really speak at all for the entire season, and it wasn't a problem.
Yeah, and that's honestly, kudos to both of them, honestly, because they don't like each other and they have big issues with one another, but they can still coexist like that. More people could learn from that, from their example,
100.
Honestly. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Every housewife could learn from that.
Yeah, totally. You know, to end here, let's think about season three. And, you know, a lot's going to change with the show just because Jax is not going to be there. Like, that inherently will change a lot of what we're going to see on the Valley. You know, there's obviously the whole topic of Sheena and Lala and Schwartz and, you know, people from that universe being added, despite what many fans feel. What do you want to see in season three? Like, what are your hopes for what the show looks like in a third go around?
Well, honestly, I never thought about that, because I usually try to think in terms of realistic as opposed to what I want. And what I think is going to happen is that if you're adding in people like Sheena and Lala, and then Michelle is already on Janet's side, you actually have more people on Janet's side. Because right now, the way the reunion ended, Janet has no one to film with besides Jason and Michelle, I guess. So even if you think about back to the Hawaii trip and how Jason and Janet were sort of secluded in their room while the others were outside, I mean, this is such an awkward dynamic. How are we going to go forward? Especially, like I said, with how contentious it's been in the comments. And I really don't think Kristen and Zach and Janet filming in a week from now is going to change anything. I don't think they're all going to be buddy-buddy. So I think that's going to be good for Janet in a sense, because she's going to have people on her side. But I wonder, I'd also really like, okay, here's something I'd like to see. I would like to see Kristen and Sheena, because they were in some scenes together this season, but we never actually saw them interact. I've seen them have some contention online when it comes to Janet or other things. I've also heard Sheena say on her podcast, well, I saw Kristen at something and we made up and we're fine. So I do think that they're at the same time back and forth a little bit too. So I would really like to see that relationship, because that is one of our OG relationships.
It is.
2013. So I would like to see that play out a bit.
Talk about history. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. And that, I also think that like, if they brought Sheena in and that was sort of something that we really kind of focused on, I think it would actually be a really good thing for Sheena, in the way of like, I think people are already sort of like, okay, she's going to be on the show. We're going to be talking about the Brock cheating thing from several years ago. And like,
so old.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are frustrated by that, just the idea of that. And so if they want to bring Sheena in, I agree, kind of balance out the cast. I love Sheena. I would love to see her on the show, but I understand the frustrations. But I think focusing on that would sort of harken back to the glory days that we all love. And it would bring up, I'm sure there would be like, you know, footage from back in the day that would make it onto the show. And so like it would scratch that itch in a way that I think would be pretty smart.
Those were the best days of our lives.
Period. The other thing that I just want to say for season three, I think it's so important for the show to just find some humor. Because I didn't laugh during season two of The Valley. Probably less than five times. I can count them on one hand. And, you know, we love the drama. I'm not complaining about that at all. I never would. And maybe it's just the dark cloud that Jax represented. But like, I do come to Bravo shows to laugh. Like, I expect to laugh at least once an episode. Like, I like the Bravo wink that Andy always talks about. Like, it has to have this cheekiness, this campiness.
Yeah.
That is missing from this show. And it's dire to me. Like, by the end of the season, I was exhausted. I wasn't looking forward really to watching it by the last third of it. So that is my biggest wish for season three of The Valley, is just make us laugh a little bit more. You know, like, don't, like, find some more balance in the tone of the show. Right. I think that's really important. I really do.
I completely agree. I feel like the fandom even concurs. A lot of people said they weren't even watching this season because it was too dark, and they were actually referring to podcasts instead. I'll listen to the podcasts
right.
for the recaps, but I won't actually watch the show. Andy has always said all Bravo shows are intended to be comedies. So if we're walking away from it feeling heavy and gross, it's not giving the levity that we need. So I completely agree. We need those light moments. Whoever's going to give that to us, I don't know, but we need that.
And the thing is, it's like Kristen Doty is a funny woman. You know what I mean? Zach Wickham, a funny guy. Like there are some funny people on this cast. They just don't have the opportunities to really show it, and it's not really highlighted.
Yeah.
So it's not like they don't have the talent there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, I think, Dana, we went for a little over an hour. I'm sorry to keep you for longer, but I feel like we covered most of our bases. I'm sure there are many little tidbits, as we alluded to, that we didn't mention, because that'd be impossible. That would take 10 hours.
Mention it all.
Is there anything else that's floating in your mind before we wrap up here?
No. I guess I'll just close out with, you know, kind of repeating what you said, that like we're looking forward to next season, but we want some more lightness to it. So that, or a good balance of both, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I do like the realness of this almost documentary style season as opposed to a reality show style season. But at the same time, we need the levity. So
for sure. That's a good note to end on. Well, Dana, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm so excited to have finally had you on the pod. When and where can people listen to The Bravo Investigator? Because you, as people heard today, you know what you're talking about. You know your shit. You have really good recall. And just do your plugs before we sign off.
Sure. So you can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at The Bravo Investigator. And you can download The Bravo Investigator podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I air episodes every Monday, Saturday, honestly, sometimes Wednesday, sometimes even Sundays, but definitely every Monday and Saturday. And you can also check me out on Patreon.
Love it. Everyone go check that out and go follow her on Instagram, because it truly, that's that I learned. I keep up with a lot of the news via your account. So I appreciate your service. I really do.
Thank you for your service. Well, thank you for having me on, Gibson. It really means a lot to me.
Of course. This is really fun and exactly what I think the people needed after this season. So thanks again for coming on, and we'll chat soon. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.